it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Happy holidays, you filthy animals. It's episode number 11 of the Hockey News on the Q podcast, brought to you by BetMGM. My name's Will McLaren, his name's Jamie Tozer, and we've got a lot to go through over the next little while, Jamie. The games are no longer being played thanks to the holiday break, but there's still plenty of hockey going on. The World Juniors are right around the corner, and there's plenty of news from within and without the league. But before we go too deep into that, it's not very often, Jamie, we can say that you were able to, in your hometown, watch some of the best junior hockey players in the world. Considering your hometown is St. Stephen, New Brunswick, you get to take in the multi-day training camp for Team Canada. Tell us a little bit about that experience, some of the things you saw, and what impressed you the most.
Yeah, well, definitely, obviously, unique experience to be that close to Team Canada and their practices. I know a lot of people were asking where they were staying, and they were not staying in St. Stephen. They were in the little place called the Algonquin in St. Andrews. Not a sponsor, but they're welcome to sponsor this show.
Beautiful spot.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, really cool. Neat to see a lot of people from around town who I know able to get out, who have never really experienced the World Juniors in person, be able to get out and see them. And what a year to have the World Juniors in your own backyard. It's such a talented roster. I know Gord Miller mentioned on Twitter, perhaps one of the best top six in Canadian World Junior history ahead of this tournament. So really cool to see them in St. Stephen and around southern New Brunswick. But the on-ice product, just so fast, so skilled, just, you know, the typical stuff you hear. But boy, Connor Bedard, you know, he's extremely talented, but you can really tell when you're in a smaller rink that he's not the biggest guy. So he's obviously making up for his size in other ways.
And the thing, you know, the prototypical comment on the WHL has always been, you know, bigger, you know, larger size guys, you know, it stands to reason that, you know, maybe he doesn't have as much room out there on the ice surface as he might in one of the other two junior leagues, but he doesn't need a lot of space. And we even saw it. We're recording for everybody's information on a Tuesday night. Last night, the exhibition game in Moncton, where he simply made that perfect behind the back pass behind the net to Shane Wright for one of the Canada goals. Like, it's just, you know, creating things out of thin air, basically. And you know, great for people in the community to see that, for sure. And something, you know, hopefully Team Canada, you know, takes this as a bit of a lesson. I know sometimes, you know, the outlier events do go to some of the smaller areas, but this really, they really have embraced the Maritimes in the course of the lead up to this event, which is, you know, all the credit to the organizers to make this a reality and allow some people to see a few players and a few things that ordinarily they would never get to see in their own backyard.
Yeah, and you got to give the people who put that together credit, because, you know, it's way easier to just have all these games at Avenir and Scotiabank and Halifax and Moncton. Right. So not an easy feat to have those in quote-unquote foreign rinks. So it's really cool, and looking forward to the other pre-tournament games before the things get started.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. And of course, it all gets underway on Boxing Day in Halifax and Moncton. Gold medal game coming up on January the 5th. So that is the look at the international stage, but there is a lot to talk about in the queue. And, you know, Jamie, this time of year, the trade period is open. World Juniors, obviously, as we discussed. There's a lot of news without any games being played, but there's one thing that has trumped all of that. It came out officially late last week, and that is Gilles Courteau, the commissioner of the QMJHL, is set to retire. It's a gradual process that's going to take place over the next year and a half or thereabouts. But, you know, quite frankly, you know, Jamie, it's very hard for anybody, I know myself and yourself included, to imagine this league without Gilles Courteau involved in it. I mean, not only has he been the president for, over almost 40 years, I think by the end of his reign, it'll be about 37. He's been in the league for 47 years in one capacity or another. And, we kind of knew that this was going to happen sooner rather than later, just simply because of the amount of time that's gone on. But hearing that news, Jamie, what are some of your first thoughts in relation to it?
Yeah, well, I agree with what you're saying. It's going to be weird not having him around. He's been such a fixture in the league. And, the Quebec media refers to the Q as the Courteau circuit. I mean, this guy has been truly the face of this league for almost forever. So it's going to be a huge transition. I think they're doing the right thing, though, kind of bringing in the new person to work under him and kind of make that transition a little smoother, because I think it's going to be a pretty significant change for the league and everyone who follows it. But I think, looking ahead, I think we're all looking forward to seeing what the new person does and what sort of changes they do to the league, if any. But I would assume there's probably going to be some gradual changes, at least.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. To expand on what you've already alluded to there, Jamie, the new commissioner is going to be named in May of 2023. Gilles Courteau will remain with the league for the first half of the 23-24 season, and then it'll be the full transition to the new commissioner, whoever he or she may be, for the latter half of that season. As well, the President Cup, which has carried that name for the league playoff champions since the inception of the league, will be renamed the Gilles Courteau Trophy. Very fitting, I think, for somebody who's dedicated that much time. But we talk about time and we talk about legacies and what people will remember the most for a guy who has been synonymous with this league. And Jamie, if you were to if you were to put your finger on it, what do you think are going to be some of the more lasting legacies, good, bad, or otherwise, really, in Gilles Courteau's reign as president?
Well, I definitely think, at least in our part of the region, it's definitely going to be the expansion in the Maritimes has been a significant boom for the league in terms of popularity, in terms of, I'm sure, revenue, in terms of just, honestly, everything. Just a huge growth spurt for the league. And they moved into Newfoundland. That obviously didn't work out. They moved in the U.S. too. That didn't work out, but at least they, made the attempts. Maybe they'll go down there again. I look even the more recent history, lots of successful Memorial Cups hosted here. Lots of Memorial Cup champions coming out of here, especially over the past decade or so. I definitely think when Courteau kind of does his exits, I'm sure he's going to mention the COVID season. I'm sure that's going to be one of his greatest accomplishments, being the only junior league to award a trophy. I think there's some things that we're not really sure about how he's going to look down the road. I think the minimum wage lawsuit from a few years ago, I'm curious to see what that looks like in the future. And then obviously the more recent stuff with the Hockey Canada sexual assault allegations. And I mean, that's part of Courteau and the Q and their problems right now as well. So I feel like there's a lot of positives and negatives right now, but I'm curious to see even a few years or maybe even a decade down the road what we look back on and see as his legacy.
Yeah, to expand on that, one of the things that comes to mind, and this kind of sums it up in another way for Gilles Courteau's time in the league. I look back, I remember in the late 90s, league had a team.
Way back here, Will.
Way back when, yeah, I know, that's all right. Let me get my copy of Big Shiny Tunes here off the shelf and we'll rhapsodize about the good old days. But once upon a time, there's a team in Beauport, Quebec. Beauport's a suburb of Quebec City. And that team was in the league for 6 or 7 years. They played out of, if you were to look at it from the outside, you would think it was literally a barn. Inside it was cozy. Let's put it that way. Cozy. You and 1,500 of your closest friends, not really sitting in assigned seats. And that's the kind of franchise that could survive in the queue at that time. That team was sold for, I believe it was about $750,000 to a consortium that involved the Tanguay family and a guy named Patrick Roy, and they moved down the road to Quebec. And within 3 years of that, they moved into the now defunct Quebec Colisée, and they're the Quebec Ramparts. And I'm sure that if Patrick Roy and his group wanted to put that team up for sale now, they're getting eight figures for it easily. And if you want an expansion franchise in this league, you're paying, you know, probably $5-6 million to do so. And if that doesn't say anything about the feasibility or the viability of the league itself, then I don't know what does. And Gilles Courteau played a huge part in that. You know, he made sure that the necessary steps were made, whether it's expansion into the Maritimes, being very cautious on vetting what ownership groups could come in and out of the league, just things that basically made the league a lot more respectable off the ice. And we're going on a 10-year span here. No franchise has moved. You know, that's always subject to change down the road, I understand. But there's a greater degree of stability than there ever was. And, you know, you mentioned some of the things that have happened in recent years, you know, the scandals, the things that the Quebec League are tied up with either directly or indirectly. And it certainly feels kind of reactionary. And I sincerely hope that the people who are in charge of bringing in a new president are mindful of that, that they're aware of how hockey culture should be trying to improve, and that should be always in the forefront of their mind. Not saying that it's not in the forefront of Gilles Courteau's mind now, especially, but yeah, it would just be great to see, you know, from maybe a moralistic or an inclusionary standpoint, a very savvy choice being made when the new commissioner is finally picked.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you talk about hockey culture. Another thing, you know, related to that is fighting. And Courteau and the Q are really on the forefront of reducing or significantly reducing fighting in junior hockey as well.
Right. Absolutely. And I mean, they got a little push there from the Quebec government back about 15 years ago, but they also heeded to it. And, you know, a lot of people were not happy with it. And, you know, if that's your thing, that's your thing. But at the end of the day, the league, from that standpoint, it does make it more appealing for families who have kids who want to take part. It certainly has changed the entire perspective and the entire makeup of the league, and for the better, by and large. You know, you talk about inclusion. Well, you're allowing yourself to include more skilled players in the game, and that's never a bad thing. So there's one guy on his way out, but there's a lot more guys that are simply on their way to new teams. The trade period opened with the conclusion of games on Saturday. As I mentioned, the Q's on break now till October. Well, that's a heck of a break, isn't it? Till December the 28th. And since then, we have seen a number of key deals, especially in the first couple days of the trade period. Jamie, anything that you have seen that has particularly piqued your interest? Maybe a few surprises there.
Well, I think there's a few of the big ones that we all kind of knew about. I don't think there's any real jaw-dropping surprises. That was hard to say. So far,
hey, it's not just me. Great.
But I think, you know, one of the more unexpected ones, I think, was the LaPenna deal, Francesco LaPenna being traded to Gatineau. The only reason that deal was really surprising because I don't think Gatineau was kind of the team a lot of us thought LaPenna was going to go to. So I think that was a little unexpected. The other deal that I found interesting, one that we didn't talk before the show, Will, this Baie-Comeau-Drummondville trade where they swapped overagers. Bit of an interesting deal. Two teams who aren't really going anywhere right now, trading two of their best players, Charles-Anton Dumont, who's the captain of Drummondville, being traded to Baie-Comeau for Xavier Fortin, who's one of the Drakkar's top players. So an interesting deal there for two teams that are kind of in the bottom of the standings.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Baie-Comeau, they're building things up. There's a lot of good young guys in the program, and that team will be more of a force to be reckoned with probably in the next, you know, 2 to 3 years, you would figure. The Drummondville side of things, you know, I'm glad you brought it up, Jamie, because Charles-Antoine Dumas, as you mentioned, is the captain, but we've already seen some changes taking place in Drummondville mm-hmm. already. You know, obviously the coaching change, and with that Eric, Steve Hartley gone, thank you, and Eric Belanger taking over the reins as head coach. You know, I'm not saying one has anything to do with the other, obviously. That would be a little rampant speculation. I don't know one way or the other, but, you know, when you see a move like that, that's probably the next thing your mind turns to, for sure. There's a change in philosophy behind the bench, at the very least. We know that. And does one have anything to do with the other? I guess we don't know for sure sitting here right now, but it certainly is a connect the dot sort of situation. You know, a couple of the other bigger ones, James Swan going from Halifax to Blainville, that actually closes off the Josh Lawrence trade. The overager came to Halifax back in November, and Blainville gets Swan for a fourth round pick going the other way. Marc-Andre Godet from Chicoutimi signs a deal with the St. Louis Blues virtually one day, and the next day he's traded to the Sherbrooke Phoenix, a team that impressed many, especially defensively. Their shots against and their goals against has been very impressive all year long, and not only do they get a very responsible defensive player in Godet, they also kick it up a notch in net with the acquisition of Olivier Adam from the Baie-Comeau Dracars. So, I mean, we knew Sherbrooke was in it to win it this year, so to speak, Jamie, but these two deals just kind of solidifies an already very solid team.
Yeah, and, you know, it's pretty easy to tell, even though we're just a few days into the trade period, who the buyers are and who the sellers are. Like, there's mm-hmm. a pretty clear line over who's doing the deal in and who's doing the buy-in. And Sherbrooke's obviously doing the buy-in, along with Quebec, Victoriaville continues to surprise us. Halifax, mm-hmm. a little quieter. Obviously, they made the Lawrence deal earlier, but I'm curious to see if they do add anything, mm-hmm. anything more anyway. You know, and the Armada, boy, talk about a disappointing season. I think a lot of us expected them to be, you know, maybe top five, top half of the league at least heading into the year, and boy, it's really just gone completely off the rails.
Yeah, and you know, I guess if you can say anything for the Armada is, you know, credit to them for recognizing the situation, yeah. being very realistic about it, and just focusing on the years to come. You know, I was talking to Bruce Richardson when the Armada were in town here in Halifax about 2-3 weeks ago, and that's his comment essentially. We want to develop the guys that we have or are going to have after the trade period. We want to focus on that side of things, and almost more or less get through this season yep. and focus on the next, you know, 2-3 maybe even 4 years. It takes a lot, and you know, we've seen it before over the course of our time watching this league, or at least I know I have, where you see teams trying to make kind of a half-hearted run for it. You can tell that you know, there's at least a couple of other teams that are most likely going to be head and shoulders above them, but they still try and make the deals to make the run anyway, and more often than not it just ends up being a total disaster. Yeah. And I mean, you know, Jamie, you know, a great example of a team that was very cognizant of where they were is one that you know very well, and that was the Sea Dogs back in the late aughts when they were supposed to go on a run in about 2009 or so. Yeah. They realized they were behind the eight ball. They didn't quite have the horses to compete with the top teams in the league. They ended up trading a bunch, and they ended up winning two President's Cups, a Memorial Cup, and three regular season titles out of it. So it takes a lot. There's a lot of conviction involved there. But at the end of the day, for the Armada this year, at any rate, they get full credit for understanding the situation and just going with it.
Yep. Yeah, I completely agree with you. I definitely think they picked the right move. And there's still some guys out there who haven't been traded yet who we're still keeping an eye on. I think big ones are probably in Bathurst, Riley Kidney and Jacob Melanson. Certainly a lot of attention on them. And then the big crew of guys in St. John who are still there for Memorial Cup run, looking at Cam McDonald, Peter Reynolds, Connor Trenholm, Nicola Hirchibiz. Those guys are still available. And I would think at the right price could be dealt.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot to go. Trade period continues on until just after the World Juniors, January 6th, I believe, 7th. You can correct me if I'm wrong there, Jamie.
Yep, January 6th.
So we will see what takes place there. And of course, you mentioned Jacob Melanson, the Q player of the week, the last one pre-holiday break, 6-point game against the Moncton Wildcats this past week. So congrats to him. Of course, that game was a come-from-behind victory over the Moncton Wildcats. And why do I mention the Moncton Wildcats? Because in a roundabout way, they are the source of, by God, we actually had a mailbag question this week. Who'd have thought?
Wow.
I thought those tweets just went into the stratosphere and Elon was deleting them and nobody was sending us any questions.
That would explain a lot, actually.
Wouldn't it, though?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it? I mean, I can't see any other rationale, really. I mean, the legions of fans who have been tuning in every week for these pearls of wisdom. But, nope, nonetheless, we managed to break through here and... first of all, thanks and a shout out to the boys on the Moncton Wildcast. So here's a little bit of cross promotion. The Algonquin may not sponsor us, but we will certainly put a our name in for another quality podcast from the Quebec League. It's run by a couple of guys named Adam Lund and Jeremy Boucher. I've had known Jeremy for a number of years. I didn't tell him to send this question in, by the way. Came in from Adam. And their question was, which would you prefer? The reverting to the 1 versus 16 playoff system in the Q, where 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15, so on and so forth, or less divisional games and a more balanced Quebec Maritime schedule? And the example that they give is Maritime teams would face, for example, Quebec-based teams 3 times a year as opposed to the 2 times that they do now. It would be 2 home, 1 on the road, and then it would rotate every second year and in that fashion. And for people who aren't familiar, the 1 to 16 playoff question, that was the playoff format for a number of years in the league. Now, because of the conference system, you play within your conference until you reach the third round, and then there's crossovers and everybody gets reseeded. And as a result, you know, if you're in a particularly strong conference, and if you're in the Western Conference this year, this could be you. You might have a theoretically tougher path to reach the President Cup or the soon-to-be Gilles Couture Cup final. So, Jamie, let's get your take first.
Well, if I had to pick one of these two options, I'd probably pick option 2, just because I'm tired of seeing the same teams over and over again. there's really no other logic than that.
I'm sure the guys in the Wildcast are happy to hear it and will never send us a question again. Thanks, bud.
But I have a hard time answering these questions because I do not like the Q's playoff format as it is right now. And what I mean by that is I don't like that 16 of the 18 teams make the playoffs. I'm not a fan of that. I know people don't agree with my take on this, but my take for years has been that I would like to see the first round completely eliminated. I'd like to see just 8 teams in the playoffs and go 3 rounds there. Maybe have a play-in for the last few spots or something like that. But kind of related to that, whether that format comes to about or not, I have a doubt. I doubt it will because people like playoff games, it seems. I would like to see more games. I would between the Maritimes and the Quebec teams. And I know there's a lot of issues with that. There's a lot of logistics and a lot of financial things at stake. But I would like to see it more. At least at the minimum, I'd like to see something like a better split of games for the Eastern Conference. So the Eastern Conference Quebec teams maybe play the Maritime teams 4 times instead of 2 times or something like that. What are your thoughts?
That's actually a really good idea right there. And it's not too far off. You know, it's hard to imagine, you know, let me just dust off my days of yore here. But it's hard to believe once upon a time, you know, when, and this isn't that far removed. You know, this was back when the league still had Halifax, Moncton, and Cape Breton in the league. You played at least four times a year. You played Rimouski, you played Baie-Comeau, you played all the way, I want to say you went as far west as Victoriaville. And when it was just Halifax and Moncton, it went as far as Shawinigan. So, I mean, it's not something that hasn't been done before. I do agree with you. I think if I'm a player, I like the, if I'm a player, especially if I'm a player on a top seeded team, I like the 1 versus 16 idea a lot better. Yep. Or if I'm a coach for that matter, it just creates theoretically an easier road to the, to a deeper playoff run. It's still, and I will say this, this playoff format is still miles ahead of a playoff format that they had a few years ago where you only played within your division in the first round. And the 2010 Moncton Wildcats can tell you all about that. So there you go, Adam and Jeremy. they ended up facing, they had about 102 points in the regular season. They faced a Cape Breton team that had 90 points in the first round, a Rouyn-Noranda team that won their division in round two, and a Drummondville team that had like 104 points in the third round. They didn't even have home ice after the second round because of the divisional alignments, or after the first round, I should say, because of the divisional alignments. That was an awful playoff round. Yep. So this is a bit better, what we're seeing right now. But still, I got to go with you on this one, Jamie. Having some sort of a better split on the Maritime versus Quebec teams, much like, say, treat the Eastern Conference the way they treated the old Frank Dillio Conference back in the day. Look it up on Google if you don't know what I'm talking about. Where you played everyone in your conference at least four times. And maybe you played the Maritimes a little bit more. Of course, that stands to reason. But maybe play them six times. Don't play them eight times. So find a balance there. And yeah, you are right. Financially, it's a tough thing to get your head around. But at the same time, if I am the Baie-Comeau Drakkar, for example, and I have Jordan Dume coming to my rink twice a year instead of once a year, you know, maybe there's a little more appeal in going to that game. Or if there's a big star in the Eastern Conference, the Quebec Ramparts right now, I'm pretty sure every team in the Maritimes would love to see the Quebec Ramparts twice this year as opposed to once. So I think I'm with you. Definitely more of a balanced schedule during the regular season, but it's not as obvious of a guess in my mind as what you would originally think. That 1 versus 16 playoff format has a lot of benefits to the individual teams, players, coaches themselves. So thanks, Jeremy. Thanks, Adam. And if you have a question about anything and everything, what do you think of Gilles Courteau's reign in his time in the league, trades that you'd like to see, trades that you may have hoped would have taken place. Keep in mind, we will not be broadcasting for the next 2 weeks. We will be back the week of January the 9th. So there's plenty of time for you to think up some questions, send them in to us. Our Twitter handles are @station_nation for Jamie, and I am @WillMcWriter. That's M-A-C, Will McWriter. Send us your thoughts. Send us your questions. Send us your criticisms. We'll take anything.
We'll read those on air too.
We'll read them. This will be the pared down version of mean tweets. Yes. NHL team profile time. We're going to talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets, Jamie, which means that we're going to talk about a guy that we basically talked about every single week, all season long, of course, amongst the drafted players in the queue from the Blue Jackets, Jordan Dume, who had a brief stint at Team Canada's camp. Did not make it, which is, again, a testament to the quality of team that Canada will be fielding at this year's event. But also another guy named James Malatesta up in Quebec, sort of maybe gets lost in the depth of that team sometimes, but a solid goal scorer, pure sniper up in Quebec, and a guy who's no longer in the queue but is drafted by the Blue Jackets. And I just wanted to mention this guy, Ben Boyd, He spent a couple years with the Charlottetown Islanders, 3 years, if I'm not mistaken. He battled some injuries. He was drafted in 2021 by the Blue Jackets. He's actually playing U Sports hockey right now with the St. Mary's University Huskies as well. So definitely a shout out to Ben as he continues on his education. And, for as much as we've talked about Dumais and as talented as Malatest is, not to spend a lot of time on Ben Boyd, but, that takes a lot, Jamie, to be an NHL drafted player and have the cognizance to go the U Sports route.
Yeah, definitely a odd situation. And, shout out to him for going through with it. We talk about potential playoff scenarios. This is something that I've thought about for decades now is at what point are we going to have an elite talent opt to play Canadian university hockey? Over junior hockey. There's nothing stopping these guys, as far as I know, that they play junior A or something like that, then you just go play up the road at UNB or UPEI or one of the Halifax schools, maybe get NHL attention that way. Obviously, would be an interesting route, and I think making a U Sports team as an 18-year-old would be challenging, but it's possible. Mm-hmm.
And if you think you can't go from U Sports to the NHL, talk to Jody Shelley, talk to PJ Stock, talk to Joel Ward. It can happen. And those are just three from the Maritimes. Yep. We're not even expanding into Ontario and out west and some of the strong programs out there as well. It's a distinct possibility. So, in the case of Ben Boyd, just because he's not playing in the Q certainly doesn't mean that there's not pro potential still for him if he chooses to go in that direction, and certainly a lot of other people. As you said, Jamie, it's not, they don't look at it as the end of the line. The UNB Reds, another perfect example. They have sent tons of players to the pros. In saying that, I think there might be a guy here, Jamie, correct me if I'm wrong, my notes are half baked here, but there might be a guy who we're about to talk to, I thought might have spent a little bit of time in university, maybe with UNB. First of all, there's Brett Gallant, who is a veteran with the AHL Cleveland Monsters, former Sea Dog, and another former Sea Dog, and Olivier LeBlanc, defenseman. He last played in the Q in 2017 and is currently in the ECHL Kalamazoo Wings.
Yep, and LeBlanc did play in university hockey, did play quite a few years at UMB. Played in one of the greatest games I've ever seen, the semifinal of nationals at UMB between UMB and Santa Fe. It's one of the craziest games I've ever seen live. And Brett Gallant. I think it's safe to say that he's kind of the last generation of the Brett Gallant type of players, one of the true enforcers. And I think him, I would assume he's probably nearing the end of the road of his career. Nearing 500 AHL career games, which is pretty wild. But I think it's safe to say we probably won't see players like Brett Gallant coming up through the system anymore.
No, Brett Gallant is the kind of guy that I remember watching in the AHL. And, you think it's bad enough I'm dusting off my, 1990s lexicon. Let's go back to the 80s for a while. In the early 90s with the Moncton Hawks and the Golden Flames. Those guys trooped around quite a bit. The AHL was a veteran league. Guys were going up and down all the time. It was less of a development league. And a Brett Gallant back then would not have stood out at all. He would have been one of many on a single team. Very safe to say that he's kind of the last of a dying breed in that regard. And an original Sea Dog back from the old 2005 team as well. In the NHL, two guys, and I kind of say that hesitantly for reasons we'll get into, Matthew Olivier, who has managed to carve out an NHL career that has been kind of amazing. He's probably one of the better examples of what hard work can get you. It's not just cliche. He came into the Q, played for Moncton, Shawinigan, and Sherbrooke. And if you told me watching him at 16 in Moncton back in 2013 that this guy was going to be in the NHL, no disrespect to Matthew Olivier, he wouldn't have been the first name I would have thought of, for sure. And he has carved out a very good career in the NHL with both the Blue Jackets and Nashville. And why I'm hesitant to say it's two players, because, of course, Jacob Voracek, who was a star with Halifax Mooseheads about 15 years or so ago, he's out long-term with a concussion. We're not really sure whether or not he's ever going to make it back to pro hockey. Hopefully he does, because he is one of the most entertaining guys and well-liked guys in the NHL. But those are the guys who are representing the Q in the NHL with Columbus.
Yeah, and I agree with you on Olivier. You know, you look back on his Q career, definitely a guy who wasn't really a big star in the Q, was kind of always in the shadows, but it definitely surprising to see him go on to have such a successful career so far.
No, for sure. And we're going to roll with that right into the 2023 draft. Prospect of the week, it's Alexi Bork. He's a right winger with the Blainville Boisbriand Armada. And why this guy in particular interests me, Jamie, ties back into what we were talking about earlier in the show with what Blainville is doing with their roster. Essentially, you know, they're going complete youth movement. Obviously, the build is on. And this guy's going to be a big part of it. He was drafted in the first round last year, seventh overall pick by the Armada back in 2021. Not quite putting up the points that he did last year, but then again, you know, he's in a very tough situation in Blainville to begin with. He's a C-ranked prospect, but I think one of the most intriguing things about this guy, Jamie, is what his role is going to be once the league reconvenes here in about a week and a half.
Yeah, and you know, on the show the past few weeks, we've talked about guys who are probably going to see their stock increase because they play on really good teams. And I think Bork's kind of the opposite, maybe. He's the guy who maybe is suffering a little bit by playing on such a weak team. But with a lot of the Armada's key forwards being dealt, he's obviously going to have a significantly bigger role, going to get way more ice time. So we'll see what he can do. I think, like you said, I think he's had a bit of a underwhelming season so far. So I'm curious to see maybe with a bigger role, he can produce those numbers a little bit. He's on pace for fewer points this year than he did have last year. Split last year between the Armada and the under-18 team with Gatineau. It'll be interesting to see if his numbers pick up or if maybe he'll, you know, hopefully not for him. Maybe he'll struggle a little bit more, but hopefully that doesn't happen for him in his stock, and we'll see that rise.
Well, one of the positives that he does have going for him, you know, he plays for a Montreal-based Q team, lots of scouts in the region who will be taking a closer look at him. And, you know, as we've alluded to, Jamie, he will have that elevated role. He will be thrust into the spotlight basically by design in the latter half of this season. And, you know, hopefully for his sake, he can make something work. So with that being said, we are off for 2 weeks. We have the World Juniors to look forward to. Obviously we have trade period still continuing on. There's a lot going on here, and there's gonna be a long period of time for us to sort of decipher this. So first of all, I'll remind everybody who's listening, if you have any comments, if you have any questions, if you have any criticisms, whatever it is, again, reach into the old Twitterverse and send us a message at @Station_Nation or at Will McWriter, that's MacWriter, and send us what you can. And keep in mind, if you do send us anything, it will not be discussed until the week of January 9th. So maybe let all this stuff blow over and see what controversy arises between now and then. Then make your comment. Then we'll talk about it on here. But for you, Jamie, it may be hard to pare down to just a couple of things, but what are you most looking forward to here in the next couple of weeks?
Oh, well, obviously looking forward to the World Juniors, having them so close to home. That'll be fun to watch those, see some of that in person. Then the trade period too, just to see what happens. And obviously being a little biased here with the covering the Sea Dogs, curious to see what they do. It's kind of an interesting time because, you know, a lot of years there's some of these big names and you kind of know where they're going to go and what the return is going to be. But at this point, it's still a mystery. So, that's a little bit of fun. But like a true Maritimer, I will be sticking around, and dealing with the winter. I just love the cold weather, and I can't believe anyone would want to leave this at all, right, Will?
Yeah, no, anybody who wants to leave this beautiful maritime climate during a historic hockey event at the Christmas season upon us has got to be just their priorities are so out of whack. Who really wants to talk about it? So when I get on a plane to Jamaica on Friday morning, I will be thinking of all of you. And when my toes are in the sand and, you know, it's, you know, when I'm sitting on the beach with a drink in hand, you know, my thoughts will be with all of you as you enjoy all that winter in the Maritimes has to offer. It's great. Don't forget your shovels and your salt and, you know, make the most of it. Make the most of what's already a super great situation, folks. And that's all I get to say about that. Yes, I will be down south for about 10 days. I'll be back in Halifax in time for relegation round and playoff round. But the
relegation only. Course. Will's only going to the relegation games.
I'm a relegation sort of guy, Jamie, you know.
At 10 a.m. start time.
Say that. But you know what? When you sometimes it does wind up being some of the more entertaining games at that stage of the tournament. You're literally fighting for your life in the tournament as opposed to going down to Division One. Things revert back to normal this year. There is relegation again. So I am, you know, legitimately looking forward to that side of things, along with the medal round and, you know, the history that will unfold in our own backyard this Christmas season. And speaking of the holiday season, we want to wish all of our listeners the very best. Stay safe, stay healthy, have tons of fun, and we will see you in 2023. Happy holidays, Jamie.
Happy holidays to you as well, Will.
And happy holidays as well to our excellent producer behind the scenes, Connor Somerville. And we will see you all back here the week of January 9th. For Jamie Tozer, I'm Will McLaren. This is the Hockey News on the Cube, brought to you by BetMGM. Thank you once again, and we'll see you next year.